Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Hello, fellow travelers, and welcome to Baldur's Gate 3. Well, this isn't Baldur's Gate 3, is it? It's a podcast about Baldur's Gate 3. I don't know. I'll try to. Is that how Dungeons & Dragons work? Do people speak like that all the time, Matt?
I mean, it depends on what your DM is like, but you are welcome to be a slightly more theatrical DM that welcomes the travelers and says that you must gather your party before venturing forth.
I'll probably just speak like this, to be honest. Yeah. Jesse, how are you?
I'm doing all right. Slightly ill, good. But you know what? Baldur's Gate has kept me going.
Aren't we all slightly ill? We've all been playing a lot of Baldur's Gate 3. Good game, innit? We'll probably delve deeper into that in a bit. But yeah, mainly going to talk about that this week. We'll talk about a couple of little things. But let's waste no time. Baldur's Gate 3. Matt, you've been looking forward to this game for God knows how long. This is pretty much, you know, if you had to like draw up a dream game, would this be up there for you?
Yeah, it's very obviously, as anybody knows that listens to this, like RPGs and immersive sims are my bag. Well, this is like a mesh of the two, right? Like it's got all the do what you want bits of an immersive sim while having all of the very rich storytelling and character builds that you get out of an RPG.
Yeah, and Divinity Original Sin 2, Larian's last game, was it the last game for this? Yeah. Is, I think you said before, perhaps your favourite game.
Yeah, it's kind of like between that and sort of Dishonored 2, like it's a very close call between the two.
Like, yeah, you're only early on, but like, can you see, is there any chance that this may overtake Divinity at this point? It's a big question for so early on.
I will say, I do think it will. And that's partially because I just think that it's better written than Divinity. And I think Divinity is like really well written. And Divinity's got really good characters. But I'd say the actual kind of overall hook of what happens in Baldur's Gate, I think it's just a little stronger. And it builds on everything that Divinity was good at as an RPG. And so,
yeah,
I say I'm very... So complete clarity, I am about 10 hours in at the moment.
Yep, I'm about the same.
We unfortunately didn't, you know, for anybody that's wondering, like, well, where are all the reviews? We got code like maybe about 3 days ago.
And this is what, 100 hour at least game? Yeah, probably. Mm-hmm.
But the signs are good. I think this is very strong. It's one of the best RPGs, at least from the initial hours that I've played in, basically since, since Disco Elysium, let's say.
Yeah, I'm like similar time in. I got like maybe 30 to 40 hours into Divinity Original Sin 2 and was really enjoying it. I just trailed off. Other things happen in life, you know. One day, who knows, maybe I'll pick it back up. But I was really enjoying it. I will say I think Baldur's Gate 3 has already made a much better, stronger impression on me. I already like the characters a lot more, I think. I think they do a great job at introducing those. And it seems a bit friendlier. I know Divinity has like a playful tone as well, but like straight off the bat, this is kind of like jokey and kind of just very silly and weird and funny.
I felt like there was a lot more hatred for everyone in Divinity and a lot of races just like, I'm going to kill you next time I see you.
Yeah, I mean, Divinity starts when, you know, the second one, you know, Original Sin 2, which is the one that they're most famous for, that you're literally on an island, it's basically a concentration camp for magic users. Yeah. So it doesn't start out in the most pleasant of regions, where Baldur's Gate 3 starts out on, it's a little bit more traditional RPG, I suppose, in the fact that it starts on a big, kind of very epic, sort of explosive prologue that then calms down to let you find your bearings. But, you know, you are put out into a forest sort of area and there's plenty of characters to go and find. Dozens of side quests. It's very open, but there's a focus to it, right, in the way that kind of the best BioWare games have got.
Exactly. And I will say, like, this isn't, like, you know, it was going to be almost inevitable that, Matt, you'd love this game, and think to an extent that I'd find a lot to enjoy in it. But Jesse, you've raised the head in this game, and like, this isn't typically your sort of game, is it? But you're loving it.
Yeah, like, I think for me, and when I think to like RPGs, usually, like, when it comes to sort of top tier experiences that I love, it's usually Disco Elysium or Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines. Like, RPGs of that caliber that put so much care into their respective worlds, you know, like the characters, the amount of freedom of choice you have. And it's not necessarily like I'm addicted to, you know, the combat or anything in particular like that, but the within Baldur's Gate 3, the amount of flexibility you have is just like mind-boggling. And being able to, because I love passing through like dialogue skill checks, whether you're using intimidation or deception, stuff like that, and there's so much freedom. It's hard to comprehend, because when you sort of explain to someone, like, there is so much you can do or say in a game like this, like, it's kind of overwhelming, but it's not overwhelming in a negative sense. But so far, yeah, I've put 27 hours into it, and I'm on Act 3 already, just at the start of Act 3, but that's not at the detriment to like the game's length. It is very much the specific character I've played has allowed me to get past many things in a not so positive way.
We'll discuss kind of like what characters we've made in a bit, but I think the thing that feeds into that is, you know, this is an RPG that very much respects the character that you build. And so therefore, you know, when you're saying about skill checks and all of that, almost every conversation has, you've got, you know, they're built out very much like similar to BioWare conversations, right? In that, like, cinematic camera, it's going between left and right kind of protagonist to person that they're speaking to. And you've got options of what you can say. But every character, the way that they're built, has these extra bits of dialogue that maybe somebody else's character wouldn't have. So, for example, my character is a cleric, and so therefore occasionally when anything to do with kind of like God or religion comes up, I will have unique dialogue that could unlock a unique path through that conversation, because suddenly I'm able to have a good chat about God with people, you know, get on their good side. Whereas, like you say, you can have, if you've got skills in deception,
yeah,
that will open that dialogue tree, which you can kind of then deceive someone and, you know, trick them into doing something. And the fact that this is all based around the character that you built, it really does feel like, whereas, you know, bear in mind, I do love Mass Effect, but in Mass Effect, you play Commander Shepard, right? And there's effectively two versions of Commander Shepard. There's the Paragon or Renegade version. Yeah. In Baldur's Gate, the character, pretty much in almost every option, is the character that you want them to be.
Yeah, it's quite overwhelming. Maybe in a good way. It's just like I have so much. Yeah. It's more the freedom of it is overwhelming. You're like, and also some of the buttons on the bottom of the screen are overwhelming. But we'll get to that in a little bit. But
like those kind of like the amount of conversations you have in this game, like usually at least from how I've been playing, it's always from the perspective of my character, but you can control any party member you want at any given time and engage a conversation with that party member. So I've been discounting what everyone else could have been saying specifically for my character and what they specialize in. And there's so much of the other game I haven't even experienced yet, just because I've been sort of like going down the specific road of what my character wants and what they specifically want to do compared to the wants and needs of everyone else in my party.
I've been wanting to please all my friends. I've just been wanting to please them. We'll get them on the side. We'll talk about party and character makeup in a little bit, because that's such a huge part of this game. But yeah, just going back to the skill checks, I want to do as many of those possible, because that dice animation is just so satisfying to watch. And the way you just add the little bonuses and be like, that roll, I never skip it. So, I want to watch it.
So for anybody that hasn't played like a dice check sort of based system before, essentially what happens is, so say Cardi is a goblin in the world, let's say.
Unbelievable.
And I come along and I'm trying to, let's say, he won't let me into a dungeon and I really want to get past. But what I don't want to do is I don't want to stab you, Cardi, because I'm not that kind of person. But I want to persuade you to let me in. So what it would be is that you could choose the persuade skill. And then basically the game will tell you how difficult that is. And so that might be that, like, because Cardi is a goblin, but he's like a reasonably sort of like smart. Sorry, Cardi.
I thought you were a goblin.
Could have been
goblin.
An elf. Could have been a person. I could have been anyone.
All right, then. Cardi is an elf and I need to get past him. And so, but he's intelligent, right? So this, it's always dealt on a 20-sided, you roll a 20-sided dice. And so if it's a difficult check, it might be, you have to roll 15 or over. And just the tension of rolling that dice and trying to get the 15, there's that there. But then there's elements of, oh, your character is better at persuasion than a lot of other characters are. So you get like a +3 bonus. Mm. So when you roll it, you might not actually get the 15 you need, but if you got 12 and then you get that +3, that feels good. Because it does like these spark effects, dice actually rolls on screen and then you get the sparks and the little fireworks as it adds the bonus. But then
very nice.
You can also, like some people have skills that can also add better dice rolls onto it. So for example, if you've got guidance, you'll then roll another D4 after, so a 4-sided dice, and that'll add whatever that is on top. Like, but it's the tension, right, of the dice roll.
Mm. Yeah, it's just how good are you at playing it truly? And like, say you get a dice roll wrong, are you safe scumming? Is what I'm basically saying. Are you going back, or are you just taking your journey as it goes?
So I have done a little bit of safe scumming in terms of kind of like if I've done something that, because the combat is reasonably tricky. Like it's not straight up like absolute full strategy game.
First couple of battles I went into, I was out in the world, I died and I was like, I'm not getting. And that's where we'll talk a bit about combat later, because that is the one bit of the game I'm not 100% sold on. Mm-hmm. But yeah, sorry.
My point there is that kind of like if I've done something where the conversation has led to the point that there's now 13 enemies descending, then I might save Scott.
I accidentally did that. There's a bit where you can talk to a goblin in a cage, and I went the wrong way with that, and I had a whole settlement after me, which was not what I wanted for my story. So I was like, okay, I'm going to let myself off here, because I genuinely, and that's to the credit of the game, like, it's not clear, you know, they don't put an angel and a devil symbol next to things, so you know, like, it's not Mass Effect, you know, this isn't the good choice or the bad choice. Yeah. It can be a bit vague, and that's like the joy of it at the same time, but sometimes you're like, oh no, that's not what I wanted. The only other time I saved Scunt was because I really wanted to, I have the, one of my characters, I have Will in my party who can talk to animals. And I just really wanted to talk to this dog, and I failed the skill check. So I was like, no, well, let's do this again. So I want to talk to the dog.
I very similar. I try to abide by the dice because that's part of the fun, isn't it? Like adapting to the situations that come out of you. That's, you know, that's obviously a very RPG thing, but it's also slightly immersive, Simmy, in that way. But yeah, when things go terribly wrong, I'm perfectly happy to reload.
Yeah.
Should we talk about our characters? Let's do that, because it's a key part, you know. Just get to know us. Jesse, you said you went with the Dark Urge, which is a very interesting. I was tempted by it, but I steered clear because I didn't want to be controlled by whatever this thing is.
Yeah.
Tell us about the Dark Urge.
So the Dark Urge is a character origin which you can choose, because basically when it comes to creating your own character, you can just sort of have your own custom character, or you can go from a bunch of different presets. But one of those presets is the Dark Urge, which still allows you to fully customize your look, your race, your background, whatever. But the Dark Urge is a character origin which translates into specifically my warlock having this sort of disgusting, murderous past and almost like a hunger for like death, gore, blood and all sorts. And throughout the game, you're presented with a lot of choices, and sometimes you don't even have a choice. And a lot of the times, which can fuck things up, where you can either suppress the urge or just let it out completely. And that can lead to a lot of grim situations, which I specifically wanted going in. I didn't want to have an easy playthrough. But
sounds a little bit like your Dexter from the TV show Dexter. Mm. He's got his like what's he call it? His
Dark Passenger.
Dark Passenger. That's it. Yeah, yeah.
But it's
have you been letting it happen or suppressing?
Oh no, I've absolutely been. And I've let it go all the way to the darkest point I can possibly do or let it get to. And I feel like I have been rewarded with something that absolutely fits my play style, which is great because I don't know, because I'm guessing if I chose the Dark Urge thing, it's because I specifically want to let that be unleashed, but I don't know what
happened. Yeah, it'd be weird if you chose the Dark Urge and like, I'm going to suppress it.
Like, that's the thing. There's a bunch of dialogue. There's a bunch of dialogue options which lets you do that, and it makes specific like skill checks or dice rolls like really, really difficult. And I don't know if maybe it'll swing in the other way where you might get rewarded in a slightly different way if you're if you have been suppressing that urge. But my character is just like, he's committed war crimes at this point and no one can stop me.
See, the thing I love about the Dark Urge is this idea of it's not just a straight up evil character. The Dark Urge is this where you can, it's basically, do you want to play good on hard mode or do you want to unleash the worst evil that this game could possibly let you? And I really like the idea, like, I am definitely going to play through as the Dark Urge kind of once I've done a playthrough normal. And I'm really fascinated to know what it's like to have to try and suppress desperate, murderous urges that can just essentially take over your body at any time. Like, that sounds really fascinating to me.
Yeah,
interesting. What race did you pick? What do they look like?
I went with a half-elf warlock, and they specialize, I think, in medicine, deception, and intimidation. But then even beyond just like choosing if you want to be, I don't know, like a half elf or just a human or an orc or whatever, you then have sub races as well. So I'm a high half elf, which allowed me to select a sort of like a free spell that I can cast at will whenever I want. But I could have gone like with a wood elf, which I think increases the amount of movement I have.
That might be what I
want. Yeah. But there's, and that's what's crazy. There's just like, I can't remember exactly how many races there are or sub races or even just specific classes you can choose from, but it's just sort of mind-boggling, really, how much is on offer. Immediately.
What name did you go for? Did you go for something stupid? Like, I normally go for, like, my Diablo 4 character is just called Egg, but it kind of ruins a lot of the gravity of a lot of situations. Yeah.
My character is called Malice. Just thought that sounded like a cool, bad name.
Is it a play on Malice?
Kind of, but I just spell it like M-A-L-L-A-S. So
I hope that doesn't translate to something really horrible in another language.
I hope not. You know what? Let me find out, actually. Let's just get a definition right now.
I'd love if it's like, I don't know.
It's like tights and leggings. And to be fair, my character is wearing tights. So that sort of works.
It all works. There we go. Matt, what did you go for?
So I wanted to recreate my character from my D&D sort of like games that I've played before, and basically years and years ago I played through the prequel to Baldur's Gate 3, a tabletop game called Descent into Avernus, and I wanted to play my character from that, but he's an Arakocra and they don't have Arakocras in this game, which is annoying.
What is an Arakocra?
An Arakocra is, have you seen the D&D film
yet? Not yet.
No, I haven't.
No, so they are. There's a character in the D&D film called Jonathan who is a giant bird.
Yeah, but look.
Okay.
So Arakocras are bird people, but they don't have them. So I have recreated my character that I had before him, who is a dragonborn. So this is kind of like a big Skyrim. Lizard man. Pardon?
No, I just had a Skyrim.
Oh, no, he's not a Skyrim. he's a dragonborn cleric called Rangar, and he has been more or less recreated as he was in my campaign from the start of pandemic, and yeah, so he serves the god Bahamut, like a dragon god, and yeah, he's kind of like he's pretty good, but he's at a time in his life where he's been like rejected from his religion and branded as a bit of a heretic because of the way that he prays them. That's my personal backstory.
Just listening to REM all the time.
Oh yeah, terrible. Yeah. And so yeah, he's on this journey with the rest of the people.
I love REM, by the way. It's no slight on REM. I was just making a losing my religion joke.
Exactly.
But there we go. Mm-hmm. Let's carry on.
So yeah, that's who he is. So you know, in terms of the things that he can do, a very wisdom focused character. So a lot of the wisdom and his kind of stuff around studying religions and studying magical artifacts, like any of that sort of stuff, he's pretty good at. That comes at the expense of a little bit of an intelligence stat. So every intelligence roll...
He's a dunce.
It's not that he's a dunce, but every intelligence roll, I have to minus one off it. So he's just got...
I think I have that as well.
He's just got a slightly softer edge to his brain than maybe
anybody
else.
That's a nice way of putting it.
But, you know, in terms of the things he can do, obviously as a dragonborn, it means that he's got a dragon breath. And because he's a blue dragon... he can breathe lightning breath, so I've got that as an ability. And then kind of things like I can summon weapons of light that can float around on their own, and I can like throw like halberds at people and use like nice.
I've not met any yet in my playthrough. Like, how are dragonborns seen in this world? Does everyone hate them or love them?
They seem to be mostly okay with me. I've had a few kind of comments where it's just a bit like, I was talking to a goblin yesterday and I had a joke. He was like, oh, you can go and, I think he was telling me to go off and have like a piss or something like that, to which I was like, oh, dragonborns can't like defecate or wee. And that's just like a joke that you can tell, because I'm fairly sure Dragonborn can probably do need to use the toilet. But I think because you're a little bit more of a mystical kind of character, I think you can kind of like pull people's legs a bit, because you're not as common in the world as like elves and dwarves and humans.
Nice. I am a half wood elf druid. And I was making them, just making her, and I thought, do you know what? I've been playing a lot of Overwatch 2 recently and getting back into it. Very good at the moment. Very fun to play Overwatch despite all its missteps. Still very fun to play. And they were looking quite a lot like Ash from Overwatch, so I've called them Ash. So there we go. As a druid, obviously I have the power of nature on my side, and I've just been turning into a polar bear at every occasion.
Got wild shape?
Yeah, I took the Circle of the Moon subclass, I think it is. So that means I can turn into a big old polar bear and just claw at people. Basically turn myself into a tank as well. And that polar bear's a really useful ability where you can just goad every enemy so they just attack you. And because they're a tank with like 30 health, it means all your other party members can just do what they want and attack while you take all the damage. And the good thing about that is as well, when you lose all your health as the polar bear, you just return to normal. You don't die. So you basically get it's a little bit like having D.Va's mech if I was to make another Overwatch comparison. And lovely things, just like I can turn into a cat if I want and try and get into small spaces.
That sounds useful.
I'm just having a lovely time as a druid, basically.
I was going to ask, how many opportunities have you had to like speak to animals or like crawl into tiny spaces to like sneak past someone or anything? Like, how has being a druid played into your playthrough?
I spoke to some ox a place. I had a nice chat with them. I did speak to a dog, which that dog is now at my camp, which is nice.
That's cool.
I spoke to that. If people have seen a clip around, we're doing our best here. We're not going to spoil any main spoiler things. I couldn't really spoil anything about this game if I tried, to be honest, because everyone's playthrough is so different. But I don't know if anyone's seen that clip of like the squirrel that you can kick and just like kick against a tree and it basically explodes. I just spoke to that squirrel and made like a truce, which was quite funny.
I had no choice in the matter when it came to that. My character's like, that's what's going to happen.
The Dark Urge just go straight in for
I'm
it?
I'm almost certain during that part, because it was quite early on in my playthrough, I was like, oh, this is the first animal I'm going to just try and speak to. I didn't have any abilities to do it, but just to examine it. And I think my character's like, oh, what a lovely, beautiful bit of scenery and such a, you know, delicate squirrel. And then he just lobbed it to the tree and it just exploded into a gory mess. And I was like, oh, okay, fair enough.
I've also kind of settled on my party, I think, for now, unless I stumble across another companion that I like fall for. But like at the moment, I've got my like three companions set, and I do like how this is more like I think it's how you described to me earlier this week, Matt. It's much more like Mass Effect. It's like you have your team and you can pick them in and out as you want for missions, basically. But I've kind of got my mind set for now. Like, you haven't found a couple I've found yet, but like that's just the beauty of this game, isn't it? You could actually probably never find one or two of these companions if you don't know where to look.
I'm almost certain I've killed two of the companions you've mentioned without even knowing they really were companions, just because of my character.
Yeah. Oh, you've accidentally killed a couple.
I wouldn't say accidentally. It was more like I chose to specifically kill these people, but I think there was one person who was sort of going through a portal of some sort, and I was wondering how important of a character they were, and they stuck their hand out, and my character had the urge like, what if I just slice their hand off?
You killed them?
I don't know if they're dead. I don't know if they're going to return.
So, but you've not met them in the next 20 hours.
Yeah. They could just be in town, like, you know, that sorting out their hand.
So that person, I think we can say who that is, because that happens in like your first 20 minutes of playing.
And they've also shown that section off as part of a demo.
Yeah, and we're all in the early access. Like, me and Matt are still in the section. People have been playing for like 3 years in early access anyway. But that character is Gale. He's the wizard. Okay. Who I very much got on with at the start, but I've recently been having my doubts about, which is, I won't reveal why, but I'm not quite sure about him. But he seemed very fun, very nice to chat to, but you just sliced his hand off.
I mean, so that's the thing, like, I might see him again at some point, just handless, but I don't know yet.
Have you been carrying his hand around with you?
Yeah, his hand is still in my inventory. I don't know what to do with it. Maybe I can give it back to him at some point. I don't
put it in a stew.
What you should do is, if you can find him, because obviously anything that's in your inventory, you can just chuck at people if you want. Yeah. Just throw his hand back to him.
I would be interested to see if he does pop up. Like, I feel like you would have seen him by now, but I don't know.
Who knows? He could be waiting for me at Baldur's Gate. Who knows?
Which is it a spoiler to ask which other one you killed? I don't know.
I'm almost certain I killed there was one character had a really cool introduction. He sort of like slides down a rock. It's sort of like when this...
Will?
It was probably Will, yeah. I'm almost certain.
He's my man.
I'm certain I murdered him brutally without realizing that he was a companion. I figured he was a companion because of the cool introduction.
I don't even know how you do that, but yeah. There you go. Yeah, my party at the moment is Will and Shadowheart, who you meet like pretty much the first or second person you meet, I think, in the prologue. She's got some stuff going on. I just want to know what her story is. She seems to have a really like interesting complexity to her, and she carries this weird object around, which I want to know more about.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just getting the feeling from her that she's got a very important role to play in this world compared to maybe some others. So I want to know that story. And yeah, Will, just he's a cool warlock who's just more than ever just really useful in battle. And I like him as well. He has a cool... There's a cool bit to his story, which I know Matt hasn't seen yet, that I really liked, so I'm going to keep him with me. And then my third party member is Karlak, who...
I've not found Karlak.
Well, wow. You probably never will now.
Is your party like just you've just you?
Yeah, you've just... This is what you've sped through this game at warp speed. You've not met half the people.
It's not my fault. I want to kill everyone.
But you haven't even found them.
I know,
you
that's
even look.
I've got Asterion, Shadowheart, and Lysel. Right, in my party. Okay. So just pretty
the basic party.
And are those your only party members?
I found one other person who I sort of tricked into being within my party, but I feel like it's sort of bad. I sort of killed all of their friends and family, and then convinced them I didn't do it. And then they wanted to join my party afterwards.
Your character is an absolute fuck.
Yeah, it's great. I love it.
I love how you've only got these three people. My camp, I've only played 7 hours. I've already got like seven people in my camp.
It is still these three guys. And even though they give me bad looks. So, yeah.
But like, Will and Karlak have a really fun dynamic. And yeah, I like having those characters. And Karlak, she's like a big like barbarian class, and she's just really strong in combat, and I like having her around. So basically, I've got... And also Shadowheart has the really useful guidance skill for like every skill check. You basically get an extra like +1 to +4 for everything. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's useful to have around. But yeah, I'm kind of set for those for now, unless something happens. Like I talk to one of them and I just get my doubts about them again, because... I'm predicting more than once someone's going to betray me in this game. It's how these games work, isn't it? Someone's going to switch on me, or someone's going to do something I don't like, and something's going to happen.
That'll You've just always be my character.
You obviously always have the telltale style at the top, right? Like when you do things, people in your party approve or disapprove. And we know from what Larian have said before, and from how kind of like their previous games have worked, if you push people, they will leave. They will just say that they don't agree with what you do. So I think, Jesse, it sounds like you're quite lucky that you found people that are sort of willing to put up with your shit.
I would say that Asterion, who is, I think he's also a high elf and a rogue.
He's really fun to have around as well.
Yeah.
I gave him like a loot just to play with.
I would say that two people in my party really like combat and death, so they don't mind being around me. Another one, not so much, but I've romanced them. So now they're just sort of with me. It's really
sad. You've put someone into a toxic relationship to make sure that they won't.
It sounds like a horror.
Whenever I speak to them, they're really happy I'm around now. So it's fine.
That doesn't sound healthy. I was going to, I was initially thinking I was going to, because you know, you got, I'm a loyal person. You got to, if I'm going to romance someone, I'm going to romance someone.
Oh, God, I have not.
Yeah. You just said you're in a...
Well, it's more like there was a lot of exploration beforehand before we settled on someone.
Exploration.
That's a lot of putting it.
Killing families. I'm kind of, I don't know, my head's been turned by Karlach, which I didn't see coming. I won't lie to you.
You're into the tieflings, are you?
I don't know. Yeah. The barbarian woman has turned my head. What can I say?
Snoozing.
But yeah, I just want to play more of this game. It's just... Like, so dense, but like, to the point, like, and I will say, like, I don't think it's an overwhelming game, but I do think the combat can be a little overwhelming to get your head around at times. Like, it doesn't really tutorialize that too much, especially because I think if you start off as a class that's a bit simpler, like a barbarian or something that just has a few abilities, if you're like me who picked a druid or like a sorcerer or something, and your bottom bar is just filled with like 12 abilities from the start, I was a bit like, I don't know what's best to do here. I don't know what I'm doing.
So our review basically straight up says, you know, we've got a review in progress and says that there's too many spells. And I've seen a few people in the comments saying that like that's a terrible kind of like piece of criticism because that's how many skills are in D&D. I think that D&D probably does already have too many skills and spells, and therefore I do think there is an... If you get to, like... I'd leveled up my character, and then I'd leveled up Gale. So, you know, I've got a cleric and then a wizard. And you spend so much time reading through what all of the... You know, because every time someone levels up, they can now learn a couple of new spells, pretty much, if they're a magic user. Like, having to read through 15, 20 different spells and figuring out what they do. And bear in mind that I've played a reasonable amount of tabletop D&D, so I know what some of these do.
Yeah.
Part of this is D&D's been going for, what, like, since the 70s? So, and it needs to sell lots of books. And how do you sell books? You put new spells in books, right? So... It's bloated because of the sheer amount of like times it's had to sell new books. And I do think some of that crosses over. I think I understand that Larian are trying to make the most accurate D&D game they could. I do think that maybe it would have been helpful to slightly funnel the amount of choices that you have in building out your character a little bit at the start. I can see it from both ways.
I mean, I like having the options. It's just like you said, the amount of time I'm just like, I just don't know what exactly some of these words even mean. And there's not a glossary for some of it. I'm just like, I don't know what you mean by that.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm playing on a controller and I can imagine the UI, because the UI can switch seamlessly between a controller and a mouse and keyboard when you're playing. And it sort of changes the entire UI. But I've been playing on the controller throughout the entire, like sort of 28 hours or whatever. And it's been absolutely splendid. But whenever combat does happen, I've got... For my main character, at least, I think 5 wheels of spells available. And I'm just like, there's so much I can do. And a lot of the time,
especially when you can only use like 3 in a day, basically. Yeah. But yeah.
There's a lot to think about, right? And I don't actually think that the game does a huge amount to explain kind of like, so there are normal abilities that you can like do with your weapon, of which you can do anytime. You know, it's a turn-based combat system, so you can do like a stab or a hit, you know, once per turn. But you can also cast spells, but you can cast like maybe 3 or 4 level 1 spells a day, and you can cast 2 level 2 spells a day. But then you also have cantrips, which are less intense magic spells, which you don't get exhausted by using, so you can use those over and over again. And it's quite a lot to learn in a small amount of time, particularly when characters can come preloaded. Like when you meet a character for the first time, they might have like 6 or 7 different abilities to begin with. It's a lot.
It is a lot. And it's not stop my enjoyment of it. It's just, it does make me, it persuades me even more to just want to talk my way out of every situation. Because I don't, not that I find combat a slog, I don't find it a slog by any means. Yeah. It's just like, it's not my favourite part of the game. I just got saying, it was a help. The skill check I did last night, It was so the difficulty, bear in mind the max is 20, right?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if it might go above
it's because it's 20 sided dice. You can't go any higher.
Yeah. And it was a 19 skill check and I got it. I got it with a 19.
Nice.
And it felt so good. And basically I talked to these, you probably met them actually. It's in the Goblin Village, these three ogres.
Yes. Yes. They're very much like the trolls from The Hobbit.
Yeah. Yeah. So I basically persuaded them to help me with a 19 skill check. So they gave me a horn, which I can blow and they'll come and help me in combat when I want.
Very good.
I don't know if it's a one use or not.
Yeah.
That's why it doesn't tell me.
I've got that in my inventory and I haven't used it yet. I don't know if I should save it for like a massive battle.
Yeah, it doesn't say it's one use.
Yeah.
But it might be.
There's sort of moments where it almost feels like, I'm going to compare it to Resident Evil, which I know is a classic, but it's more in the sense like I'm saving all this ammunition near enough for like if these big battles are going to occur and whatnot. I'm just sort of hoarding everything. I did want to ask you guys, like, are there any specific moments, sort of immersive sim-esque, that has stuck out to you in your playthrough so far? Because there was one sort of thing for me that sort of reminded me of a moment in Prey. Like at one point I found myself in a prison sort of separated from my party and I wanted to get to where the prisoners are to kill them, naturally. I wasn't able to pick the lock and I couldn't convince the guards to let me in either. So I was trying to think, like, could I, you know, pickpocket? Yeah, I mean, I could just murder them all, but it was sort of in a contested area and I was like, I'm going to get fucked up if I try that. So I was thinking, I tried stacking some furniture to jump over, but my jump wasn't quite high enough. And I stacked like 8 different crates and I was like, holy shit, this is actually working. I could try and like pickpocket the warden, but they're too fucking smart for me. And then I remember that I had a spell just called Gaseous Form. And I just turned into a cloud of mist and just went through the bars. And I was like, of course I can do that. But it took me a few minutes just trying to figure out like what is within my arsenal to do that. And then of course the game would let me do that. Mm-hmm. It was really surprising. I don't know if you guys have had any moments like that.
I mean, I've done the classic kind of Divinity thing, which is like if you need to, like someone has a key that you need to open a door. So what you do is you get one character to speak to that person. So that the person you're trying to pickpocket is now talking to someone and therefore, you know, their concentration is there. And then you switch to another character that's got a pretty good stealth, you know, ability. Then you crouch behind them and then you steal the key. And hey, presto, you've got the key. But I did see this morning, I was watching a stream where Matthew Mercer was playing it with Sven Binky, who's the director of the game. And he was trying to get across a moat onto a tower on like a castle.
Oh, okay.
And so he stacked a load of boxes up and then got an arrow, which has got a teleport on it, and fired the arrow to the other side of the moat. And then that teleported him across. Got a lot of that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't really done too much of that outside of combat. Definitely in combat, like any time there's the ability for me to just put grease on the floor and set it alight, I will do it. Or just like shoot arrows onto chandeliers and it'll just like land on people. I'm doing all of that.
I didn't even
like,
think of doing that. Even being able to talk to someone and then switch to someone else and then kill them. It's opened up now.
All of that sort of stuff. But yeah, I've done stuff where kind of like you'll come in and you'll open a door and everybody in the next room suddenly turns around and they're like, they're going to, so you use the bottles of grease and you can chuck those on the floor. So as they try to get to you, they just slip up on the grease and then you can just set the grease on fire.
Yeah. Oh, we could talk about this game forever, but the truth is we're barely playing it. Well, not barely far into playing it. So
I'm at a point where kind of in terms of like, you know, combat obviously has a huge amount of choice, but I'm now in like an area which is kind of like this goblin camp where when I think of the amount of choices that I've got and how this could happen, it's kind of like I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but it's a case of like these goblins are going to attack a bunch of good people. But the options that you've got is obviously there's the very classic, like you can go in and stop the goblins, right? Or you could join the goblins and become evil. But even within the kind of like trying to stop the goblins, I'm already assessing kind of like, how am I going to stop them? Because it's not that there's, you know, even in BioWare's games, which have, you know, good amount of choice, and even in for something like The Witcher, which also has a good amount of choice, generally there's kind of like two or three options, right? And but there's kind of like a what feels like the canon kind of choice that pulls you through, and I just don't get that fit. Like, it doesn't feel like anything's canon in Baldur's Gate 3. It feels like just like every option, like am I going to go in and decimate every goblin in the camp? Am I going to find the person that leads them and do like a surgical assassination and hope that the entire thing falls into disarray? Am I going to join them and convince them that maybe that I can help them defeat all of these people that they want to kill and then turn on them at the last second? You know, kind of like, it doesn't feel like the game is pushing me to do anything in the way that storylines of other games do tend to feel like there's a vague point that you're supposed to be going to.
Yeah, I love that I just don't really know yet what the actual story of this game is either. Like, I know I've got a personal objective, which will happen at some point. I can't believe that's the 100-hour story of this game. Yeah. But yeah, I'm just, yeah, I'm excited for it to open up even more. I would just, you know, I'd not the dark urge, but I'd urge anyone to give this game a go. Like, I feel like you can, it may, like, on the surface not be your cup of tea, but like, it's not maybe normally my cup of tea, and it's not normally Jess's cup of tea necessarily.
No,
but we're both having a fantastic time with it. It is only on PC at the moment. What, PlayStation, about a month?
Yeah, so PlayStation, unfortunately, coming out on the same day that Starfield, well, it's a couple of days before Starfield,
insane.
I think. But, you know, none of us have played Starfield yet. My instincts tell me that this is a much more intricate RPG than what Starfield could ever be.
I feel like I'm going to have 10 playthroughs left in this game where they're all going to be entirely different, depending even on like the characters you want to play as. Because correct me if I'm wrong, like, can you play as... Because when you're creating a character, the origins are available. Mm-hmm. Like, you can choose if you want to play as Lyzelle or play as...
Yeah, yeah. So any of the companions you could actually choose to play as, which means that their secret stories that when you're playing the game, you're trying to coax out of them. Like, Shadowheart has a secret. I have no idea what the secret is. But if you play as Shadowheart, you're going to know what that secret is from the start. And then it's your choice. Do you tell the other people that you meet? Do you keep it to yourself? All of that. So there's all of those opportunities. I think there's a certain, obviously this is a game that's been in production for like 6 years, for a very long time, with an awful lot of early access kind of contributions and stuff like that. There's a chance that, you know, when you get into the second and third act after that first one, that it might be a bit too big for its own good in many respects.
Who knows? No one has seen the end of this game yet. Like,
yeah,
well, but it makes a very, very strong, very strong first impression.
Absolutely. And I think, like, if you like RPGs, I would, and even if you're someone that's like sees the idea of turn-based combat as something that would put you off, the combat feels like such a small part of this game in comparison to actual. So many RPGs are like, because they're action-focused RPGs, you go into rooms, you murder everything, and then you chat to the people that are left. When combat happens in this, it feels like it's a big part of the decision that you made. Like, combat quite often is a result of what you decided to do rather than just the standard gameplay of the game. I do think it's one of the most astonishing, at least the 10 hours that I've played, is one of the most astonishing sort of achievements in RPG game design.
I will say, like, earlier this year I was like, Starfield is the only game that could take Tears of the Kingdom away from Game of the Year for me. If I finish Baldur's Gate or get anywhere near finishing it, carries on at this pace, then I could easily see this overtaking.
I think it already has surpassed anything I've played this year already, for me at least, which is surprising again, because it's, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, which is something I've never even, you know, looked at before. It's, you know, turn-based combat and an RPG in general, but it's really convinced me.
Yeah. It's like Zelda obviously has quite a lot of the similarities to Baldur's Gate in many respects, in that, like, it's a game that allows you to play your way, and there's so many kind of those emergent systems and stuff like that. So it doesn't help me that essentially there are two RPGs out this year that do the shit that I like.
And still Starfield to come.
And still Starfield to come.
At that sort of level.
Yeah. The narrative thrust that you get through Baldur's Gate, you know, pushes it over Tears of the Kingdom for me, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Fantastic stuff. I'm sure we'll talk about this game again at some point this year, more than once. But yeah, if you're enjoying Baldur's Gate, or you've got any funny stories maybe from the first few hours of the game that don't seem very spoilery, let us know, and we'll talk about that next week. IGN_UK feedback @IGN.com.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Come. Couple of little things we can talk about briefly this week. Me and Matt, we've made a little PS1, little mini documentary thing that's out today. If you didn't know, it's 90s week at IGN, where we've been looking back to the decade that belonged to Spice World. but we've been covering some game stuff, some film stuff. We've got stuff on the Turtles. We've got stuff on the Dreamcast. But me and Matt, we focused on the PlayStation 1. You did some great interviews with Mr. Sean Layden and Andrew House, two former presidents at Sony, who you may remember from such events as E3 2018. You know? they're on E3 a lot, but not anymore. They've both left Sony. But yeah, they're both around in the 90s at the launch of the PS1, and maybe you'd like to watch it. It's called How the PlayStation Changed Everything. And I think the interesting thing is we do talk about the games a bit. Obviously, the games were a massive part of why the PS1 was great. But the actual marketing, when you look back, you forget just how, and the PS2 as well, but you forget the PS1, just how weird and bold some of those adverts were.
Yeah, kind of like, you know, if you do have time to, how long? It's about 20, almost 20 minutes long, isn't it?
23 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it does dig into this, and you'll get to see, Cardi, you've done an amazing job of like plucking out some of the.
You did an amazing job.
Yeah, but like you've brought it to life with some of these, like the choices that you've made on adverts are things that, like, I don't necessarily have nostalgia for the PS1. It's been an interesting thing for me to do because I never owned a PlayStation 1. I was a PC kid in the 90s. Mm. And so this was me kind of getting a bit of an opportunity to properly deep dive into something I don't really have a huge amount of knowledge about and properly do the research on. But going through those commercials for PlayStation, there are some I definitely remember, one of which you've definitely used, which is that alien-headed Scottish girl.
Mental wealth.
Yeah. Which
is troubling.
I remember that. It's like proper 90s nightmare fuel. But
it has nothing. They don't show a game. They don't mention the word PlayStation.
Yeah.
It's just 30 seconds of weird.
Yeah. Yeah. But the one that I just love it. And I think the thing that I figured out when I was watching all of these is I think Europe and England and, you know, the UK got the best PlayStation marketing, because it was just, the American one is definitely a little bit edgier, a little bit more attitude-y, whereas ours was just a lot more comedic. So that society, was it a Society Against PlayStation?
SAPS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With this kind of like faux American, like businessman, kind of like, he's almost like an FBI agent, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Coming in, and he's showing you kind of like, there's a bit in a lab where they're talking about how PlayStation was made. And it's a two scientists testing on rats, and one has been injected with PlayStation games and one has been injected with regular games. And the PlayStation one is like spinning around and then explodes. It's that bananas kind of like, it's just so, yeah. It knew
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Yeah. But I think the thing is when you look at Nintendo marketing, it was very much like, well, the SNES is for kids, right? Like it's got, and PlayStation was just like, no, this is for absolute batshit bananas people.
Yeah, it's great. And they've kind of, you touch on it a bit, they've kind of, don't worry, modern PlayStation games are some of my favorite games, but they are safer than they've ever been. They know what works. It's these single player adventure games, essentially.
Yeah. And the documentary then, goes into why that happens, right?
Exactly. But yeah, it did make me nostalgic for that era where you'd have something like Vibrib and Parappa. Even first Resident Evil Metal Gear was just so different at the time.
Yeah, I know that kind of that first Resident Evil has obviously got like a little bit of link back to Alone in the Dark, which obviously has that kind of style. But when you think about like, at that time, there was nothing like Metal Gear Solid, nothing like, you know, that part of the documentary has kind of Sean Layden talking about how important Final Fantasy VII was. You know, that was a huge kind of leap forward for those kind of console RPGs. And yeah, it was an era where your game library would just be nothing like anything that anyone that had a SNES or an N64 would be. It was so, so wild and experimental.
Yeah. Check it out if you've got the time. There's also a written version if you prefer to read it that Matt's done. But yeah, IGN and YouTube. How the PlayStation changed everything. Dun, dun, dun. I was just going to briefly talk about True Detective because I'm rewatching season one. And I couldn't believe that it's almost 10 years since that came out. Where has the time gone? Yeah. 2014 it was out. Ridiculous. Halfway through it, because I'm kind of doing some research ahead of Alan Wake 2, and this is quite obviously one of their massive touchstones, and it's still excellent. Still arguably the best single season of television.
It's very good.
Like, I forgot just how good, and I know at the time it was massive because he'd kind of gone missing, but how good McConaughey is in this. Like, Harrelson's very good, but McConaughey just steals like every scene.
Because
he's so good.
It's like, I don't think McConaughey is a method actor, is he? But like, it's almost like it feels like the sort of role you go method for. It's got a lot of that, like a man that's going through a real weird time of his life and just sort of like everything's kind of broken him and he's gone this kind of like weird spiritual journey to rebuild himself.
Oh, it's just impeccably done. The tone of it is amazing. Have you watched True Detective, Jesse?
No, I
haven't. Sort it out. 8 episodes that first season. Watch it. Season two, like, season one is, I think, undeniably a 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
Like, a masterpiece to me. Season two, I like it more than other people. Like, I think it's okay. Like, a 6, maybe. Season three, again, though, I think is fabulous. Like, amazing. I never use the word fabulous. Why have I used the word fabulous? It's amazing. Like, I'd give that, like, an 8 or 9. I feel like not enough people watched it just because 2 was such a fall off, it soured the taste.
So that's what I remember hearing.
But they're all completely unconnected stories as well.
Is the creative team solid across all of them? Is it the same people that
I think
work
it was the
them?
Same writer? Obviously, it was Cary Fukunaga who directed season one, but he didn't direct. He didn't direct 3. I don't know about 2. It's the same writer. Is it Nick Palazzo?
Is it such a massive drop off in quality though?
It's just by comparison, like, they made one of the all-time great seasons of television, and then the one that followed up just wasn't as good. It was meh. I'd probably recommend watch 1 and then watch 3, because I think 3 is really, really good. Like, Mahershala Ali in 3 is unbelievable. Like, he has to play like 3 different time periods of the same person and does it amazingly.
I've watched, I think, both seasons of Mindhunter. How different is Mindhunter compared to True Detective?
True Detective is more, it's not based in anything real life, so you're not going to get like the little cameos of Manson and people in it. Detective is a better show, I'd say.
Okay. It's got a similar sense of depth and darkness to it, I'd say.
Yeah, that's good.
It's definitely a more dramatic show, isn't it, True Detective?
Yeah, whereas like Fincher and Mindhunter is probably more focused on the killers and the victims.
Yeah.
This is more focused on these two detectives and more of like this place. And it has some weird, almost allegorical like like otherworldly weirdness okay. to it at times as well. I don't know. It's just unbelievable. It's only 8 episodes as well. Like,
that's not
get
bad.
It on. It's so good. Yeah, it's only because all the antler imagery in Alan Wake 2 and the FBI detectives. I was just thinking this is very,
I have to good. I have to get past the Meg 2 tonight first, and then I'll give.
Meg 2.
The trailer played before we watched Oppenheimer, and it looks so stupid. I was just like, might as well.
I can't imagine watching the Meg 2 trailer before Oppenheimer.
I know.
That sets you in the mood, doesn't it? We need to go see Oppenheimer, Matt. You haven't seen it yet.
Not yet.
Maybe we'll find time next week. Doubt it. But, yeah.
It's all that Gamescom. It's Gamescom.
God, that's so new. Don't. Why did you have to mention that word?
Very.
why don't I mention these two words? The Endless Search. That was three
yeah,
words.
That was
idiot.
Inside, it's a UK IGN crew. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Hold tight, the DJ, we coming through. Yeah, and the ones and twos. We got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Is it Endless Search?
We have been sent in quite a few Endless Search, and we are always grateful for that. We will get around to some of them, but we can only do one at a time. So this week, we've got one from a name that may be familiar to you, Max. I know it sent you into tears. From Alex Vasquez, who says, howdy, y'all. It's Alex, survivor of the trauma from the holiday sandwich special
of 2020. Is this the Chicago sandwich?
It is. If you're a new listener or you've never listened to our 2020 Christmas Day special, which is all about sandwiches.
I've yet to do
then
that.
This was the final story from this, which... sent me, Matt and Joe, into actual tears. So I'd always recommend listening to that. But anyway, Alex says, I'm writing to report that as of December 2022, I'm a father. Hey. I'm the sweetest little boy and couldn't be happier to finally a dad. He's only 7 months, but can't wait to start playing games with him. That being said, I'm struggling to choose which game he should play as his first. The first game I remember playing was Kirby's Block Ball on my Game Boy Pocket. It's not a good game, but I have very fond memories of it. I'd love for my little guy to have the same memories. Do I pivot to newer games? Should I show him some of my favourites? The options are endless. I'd love to hear what you think. So this is just a quick question before the endless search that Alex is setting in. I'm always a fan of Mario as a first game.
Yeah.
Whether you go back to original Mario for the basics or just go in with Super Mario Odyssey, which is just... in my eyes, the perfection of the format. But yeah,
I mean, I would say definitely go for, because I didn't really play a lot of games like Mario when I was a kid. I was much more like Monkey Island, and so actually, and people find, like, sometimes I talk to people and they find this a bit weird, but I actually find Mario can be quite tricky because, and I
2D
think it's
Mario
largely,
for sure,
yeah. But I think part of that is, like, if you're brought up on Mario or at least platformers, something like Rayman that's kind of, you know, that's got like a little bit of the tricky kind of precision to it. I think if you can get on that at an early age and, like, you grow up and you're trained in that, then you'll be fine with platformers for the rest of your life. I wasn't, so I suck at them.
Yeah. But you're good at choice-based adventures and RPGs.
Yeah, just make them play Baldur's Gate first. It's that simple.
Yeah, Baldur's Gate 3, first game ever.
Dark Urge, simple.
Yeah. Too much nudity for a child in that one, I would suggest. Anyway, Alex has sent in a version of The Endless Starch, which we haven't played in a long time. If you don't remember what this one is, it's basically, I think there's one, two, I've picked out 8 of the suggestions Alex sent in here. And basically, they're all game names that have had one letter changed, and you have to work out what that new game name is based on the clue that's been given. I think my example for this one is always an open world game set in South Florida. Is it South Florida? I don't know. Open world game set in Florida where rodents have overrun the town, and it's Grand
GTA,
Theft Auto.
My Mice. City.
There we go.
I'm
there's
so
the example.
Shit at this game, man. It's unbelievable.
Well, there's 8 of them here. So there's a clue, and then there's like a second kind of like clue just in case you're not getting off the first. It's a point each, just first to shout out gets them. So the first one is, some of these are generous clues, so I won't worry too much. Join Marth and Roy and a bunch of other sword-wielding nerds as you do anything and everything to anger and piss off the denizens of Elios in the latest entry in the storied RPG franchise.
Say that again.
Join Marth... Okay. Join Marth and Roy and a bunch of other sword-wielding nerds as you do anything and everything to anger and piss off the denizens of Elios in the latest entry of this franchise. So you've probably got the series. Yeah. Can you remember what the most recent
didn't it come out this year?
Was it? I think I'm in January.
Fire Emblem Enrage.
It is.
There we go.
There we go. The game was engaged. So there we go. 1 point to Jesse. I should probably keep a tally of this, which I'll do now. Right. Second one. Join the galaxy's greatest bounty hunter as she descends on planet Pan to find the elusive Chozo Ciabatta recipe. That must be, I don't know what that is, but there we go. Join the galaxy's greatest bounty hunter. She descends on planet Pan to find the elusive Chozo Ciabatta recipe.
Fuck me.
I'm guessing
Metroid Bread.
It is Metroid Bread. Shit, there we go. Good. He's got it. 1-1.
Damn. Metroid Bread is so goofy.
Third one. Join Chai as you hurry to install... Join Chai as you hurry to install... Why can't I say this word? Join Chai as you hurry to install root... I can't... This is like one of those... Do you ever get a line of BO? You can't, like... You can't say a certain word after a syllable. Join Chai as you hurry to install rooters to beat this Xbox surprise release. It's a weird little tongue movement.
I wasn't expecting that word.
Join Chai as you hurry to
install... Wi-Fi rush.
It is. Thank you so much. So I don't have to say that again.
Fuck.
Jesus Christ. I don't know what going from an L to an R was a problem there. Hurry to install routers. I want to say Reuters. Install routers. Why can't I do that?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Okay, 2-1 to Matt. 5-1. Help the newest web slinger as he takes up clerical duties and helps organise medical records for the denizens. Loves the word denizens, Alex. I like the word denizens. Anyway, help the newest web-slinger as he takes up clerical duties and helps organise medical records for the denizens of Spanish Harlem. Help the newest web-slinger as he takes up clerical duty and helps organise medical records. That's probably the only bit. I won't focus too much on the medical. There is an extra clue if you need it. But only if you both agree to trigger it.
I know what film is, obviously, but I just can't.
Well, it's a game, isn't it?
Oh, fuck.
They're all games.
Okay, I think I know the game, but I could do with the other bit.
Yes, I agree.
With great paperwork comes great responsibility.
Well, but that only helps me out with the game. Yeah.
Does it, though? Does it, though?
Marvel, Spider-Man... No, that's so stupid. Piles Morales?
No, but you're along the right. You're not miles away.
I know that's the game.
That sounds gross, though, Piles Morales. I don't know what it is, man.
You're changing the right thing there.
Files Morales?
Files. Okay, it's Files.
There we go.
I imagine like piles of like paperwork, but then...
Yeah. Not actual piles. Right. 2-2 with 4 to play. It could be a tie. Who knows? Next one. Perfect your calculus, trigonometry, and geometry skills with 8 really nerdy heroes in the newest entry in Square Enix's HD 2D series.
Go again. Sorry.
Perfect your calculus, trigonometry, and geometry skills with 8 really nerdy heroes in the newest entry in Square Enix's HD 2D series.
Is it Octomath Traveler?
It is. Yeah. It's Octomath Traveler 2, but I'll give it to you. I'll give that one. 3-2 to Matt. 3 more. Traipse across Hyrule with Marcus Fenix as you clash chainsaws with hordes of Bokoblin in this gory magical romp. Do we know who Marcus Fenix is?
Yeah.
I'm guessing we do.
Yes.
Traipse across Hyrule with Marcus Fenix. That's probably all you'd need, to be honest.
Fuck. Sorry, can you just repeat that again?
Traipse across Hyrule with Marcus Fenix as you clash chainsaws with hordes of Bokoblin in this gory magical romp.
Is it just The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom? No.
I mean, you've literally not changed the letter. You've just changed how you say it.
But,
I mean, where is Marcus Fenix from?
Oh, Gears of the Kingdom.
It is Gears of the Kingdom. Three all, two more. Could it be a tie and could everyone go home happy? Here's the question. Test your might against other marsupials in the latest entry in Sydney's greatest fighting game franchise. Ooh, how good's your marsupial fighting game knowledge?
Oh, Mortal Wombat.
It is Mortal Wombat
1, maybe? Or
yeah, but I'm giving it to you. Fuck. Right, 4-3 to Matt. Jesse, you can't win, sadly, but you can save the draw of the last one. Join a celebrated pastry chef as he battles his culinary demons and attempts to find a remedy in the sequel to a psychological horror classic.
Alan Bake 2.
There we go. 5-3 to Matt. He takes it home.
I think that's the best I've ever done on that game.
You did well enough. I'm happy for you.
I really like the endless starch. I'm not very good at actually like preparing it. I'm not very good at coming up with
it. Oh, it's hard. We've almost run out of games for it, but thank you, Alex. Enjoyable. As usual, IGN underscore UK feedback at IGN.com. If you've got any feedback at all, doesn't have to be endless search games, any feedback about what you've been doing, just let us know, innit? Tell us.
Yeah, how are you?
Yeah, how's it going? Just let us know how you are. As we've got here from three more people. Matt, what we got?
This one's from Steve K, who says, "Hey guys, I've listened for over 10 years, Jesus. But this is my first time writing in. Following on from your discussion about things that ruined your cinema experience, I have a story of my own. When Dunkirk came out, I took my dad to see it. We went to a daytime showing a couple of weeks after it released, and as I'd hoped, we had the entire cinema to ourselves. Bliss. 5 minutes before the film started, a woman came in with a very elderly man, maybe her dad or even granddad. He looked like he may well have been on the beach of Dunkirk himself, and it made me smile that they'd both come to watch the film together, just as my dad and I had."
What a lovely story this is. Let's end it there.
"That was until they decided to sit right next to us, leaving one empty seat between us."
Who does that?
"So when I went to see Asteroid City, someone fucking did this. Me and my girlfriend were sat down and then someone sat one seat apart from us in an entirely empty cinema. It's like, fucking go anywhere else, mate."
It's good fun.
The entire cinema...
I apologised for it, but I just wanted to be close to you.
The entire cinema was free and they sat next to us. Okay, fine, I thought. Maybe they just really wanted those particular seats. The film started, and within a few minutes, the elderly man began to cough. No. Not a hacking cough that suggested that he was unwell, but more of the kind of cough that you get if you have a dry throat. A nervous cough, maybe. And it didn't stop. In fact, he coughed and cleared his throat loudly, pretty much constantly, every 2 minutes or so, for the entire film. Halfway through, I considered grabbing my dad and moving to the other side of the cinema, but thought it would be so obvious why we were moving, and despite how annoying the coughing was, I didn't want to make an elderly man or the woman he was with feel embarrassed or self-conscious.
I would have moved. I would have done it.
Absolutely.
Suffice behind them so they didn't have to see me.
Yeah. Suffice to say, the most poignant moments of the film were somewhat ruined by this, and genuinely put me off going to the cinema for a while. I've since watched Dunkirk in the safety of my own home, and it's one of my favourite Nolan films. But to this day, whenever I watch it, I hear the echoes of this man's coughing in the back of my mind. Love the podcast and all of you. All the best from Steve.
Thank you,
that's,
Steve.
That's tragic. That would annoy me. To be fair, when I saw Dunkirk, it was so loud, I don't think I would have heard anyone coughing. But if they sat next to you, you probably would. Would you have moved?
So I have moved in the cinema before. When I went to see Mother... there was this was the point where they weren't next to us, they were in the row in front of us, but you know, obviously not every film is for everyone, but these four guys, you know, a very, like, I'd say the eldest one was probably in his late 50s right down to someone in kind of their 20s. I got the impression like a group that had gone out from work maybe rather than a family, and they clearly didn't get and was not interested in it, but instead of just getting up and leaving, they just like complained all the way through it. So
what a weird thing to do.
Me and the couple of friends I was with, we just got up and behind us was the premier seating, which obviously very few people go into because it's what, £2 extra to go in premier seating at Odeon. So we just went and sat up there.
You're such a rebel. That's such a dice roll, a dexterity check from you.
Clearly.
I was so worried before we watched, for me and my partner watched Oppenheimer, because we saw Barbie in the morning, Talk to Me in the afternoon, and then Oppenheimer in the evening. And just seeing a bunch of people online say, you know, people on their phone taking pictures while watching Oppenheimer and shit. It's just like, I think I'm really over going to the cinema unless it is for like one maybe specific film in the year that really, really
Nothing beats it. But I'm a snob and only go to like three different screens that I know people are relatively well behaved at.
Yeah.
And I'll never stop sitting in a cinema seat. You'll never stop me. I've got an email from Gary Fields who says, "Hi, IGN UK podcast team. First time, long time, etc., etc. I look forward to the podcast every week as I enjoy listening to your chats while I go running. Since the key to running is to be distracted by what you're listening to, you don't realise how truly miserable running is. So thank you for that. I'm glad we are a distraction. I've recently been trying to improve my Spanish, and I know one of the best ways to learn a new language is to immerse yourself in it. Despite living in a very Latinx neighbourhood in Chicago, I'm still struggling with making it part of my daily life, so I thought I'd maybe try playing a video game in Spanish. I booted up a very neglected and very incomplete save of Far Cry 6, and switched all the dialogue and UI, including menus, to Spanish. Firstly, the game is infinitely better in Spanish. Although I'm missing out on Giancarlo Esposito's performance, everything feels significantly more authentic and appropriate for the Cuban-inspired country of Yara. The game even has an extra layer of challenge that was previously missing, and much needed, as navigating the bizarrely implemented faux RPG elements is much more difficult when you only understand half of what you're reading in the menus. Strangely enough, my Duolingo Spanish courses prioritize teaching me words like airport and dinner over more important things like armor-piercing bullets. With that being said, have you ever put similar limitations on yourself while playing a game in the name of immersion or for some other reason? Whether it's something like changing the entire language of a game or actually observing the day-night cycle in Red Dead 2 and eating meals at regular times. This is something I find myself doing often, and I want to know if anyone else does it and how it affects your experience with certain games. If anyone on the podcast is bilingual or trilingual, etc., pass along your tips for learning new languages. Keep up the excellent work, and I don't speak Spanish. Jesse, you speak a little bit of Spanish, right? You pronounce it.
Y respeta el mar.
There we go.
Respect the sea, there you go.
From Gary from Chicago. I often think this, like, I am a firm believer, like, when I'm watching a film, I'm always, like, subs over dubs.
Absolutely.
I'm never going to watch a dub film. I want the subtitles, and I'll watch it in the language it's intended to. With games, though, I never, like, never do I put on, like, a Japanese game and go, I'm going to play this in, you know, with, I'd have the text in English, but, you know, like, the actual voice acting in Japanese, like Yakuza or something like that, I'll choose the English version. I do wonder why that is. I don't know if it's because playing a game is much more active and I don't have that extra level of brain power on top of it.
As someone who's done it, it is harder. So I actually, the first Plague Tale game, I found the voice acting so bad that I switched it into French. And that was the initial reason. And then I realized it does give you a more authentic sort of atmosphere to that game. But when you're trying to have a bit of combat, or you're trying to get past, that's a lot about sneaking around and solving puzzles, it's much more difficult to keep up with what the kind of idle chatter is in that. And obviously, so in certain games, idle chatter, particularly in something like The Last of Us, you know, if you imagine playing The Last of Us in a different language, a lot of the idle chatter is what builds the characters out. And it is harder to keep up with that when you're concentrating on getting through like a stealth section or something. But I played Sekiro, I did that in Japanese. Much less kind of like idle chatter or anything like that in Sekiro, obviously, so that's easier. And I tried Ghost of Tsushima in Japanese as well, very quickly switched back to English.
I've never really done it.
I think the first time I ever like sort of figured out like, holy shit, this voice acting is dreadful, was a Dragon's Dogma. I switched to Japanese instantly just because right. there's so much repeated dialogue, like, the goblins are here. And it's just like, they say that all the fucking time, switched to Japanese. But I think when I play games like Yakuza or Stalker, I'm usually playing in the respective languages just because it adds to the immersion. And I have subtitles for absolutely everything that I watch or play anyway, so I'm used to like darting my eyes, reading dialogue and whatnot. It's just what I'm comfortable with.
Yeah, it's fair enough. I was gonna, I had one there. Oh, I have occasionally, just because it's funny and just because sometimes they're so grinding, like in FIFA, just switched it to a different country's commentators just because I can't bear some of the nonsense that Lee Dixon comes out with or whatever you have to listen to. So, and sometimes you get the very funny ones where they just go absolutely crazy for a goal and stuff. So that's always fun. But yeah, I've never really done it for a proper story game. Yeah, as for tips to learn language, I don't really have. I haven't learned a new language in over 10 years, so I'm sorry. But immersing yourself, always a good way.
Yeah.
Duolingo's fun though, isn't it?
Mm.
So yeah, keep at it. That's my
sincere sounding.
I know, I'm very tired. Jesse, what have we got?
Cool, this is from Salman Hamid. He says, hi gang, long time, first time and all that. Smiley face. Really enjoy the podcast, though slightly concerned the food chat's fallen away. Perhaps a result of all the juicy film/TV/games content. Bring back the snack chat, though. He goes on to say...
Have you got any hot snack chat recently? Have you tried those Burger King Whopper flavoured Doritos?
No, but I keep seeing the adverts and they're so fucking annoying.
I tried them. Okay, they just kind of taste a little bit beefy with a little bit of a pickly aftertaste.
I'll just have Burger King. Like, if I'm really desperate.
The thing is, I don't eat Burger King, so I don't know.
Burger King for me is like an airport thing. If there's a Burger King in an airport, I'll always have it. But I won't ever go out my way here.
Oh yeah,
Burger King.
No one's going for a sit down meal at Burger King. Are they like for a treat? I mean,
You never know. You might.
There we go. There's a bit of snack chat. Any hot snack chat from you, Matt?
In regards to that kind of like crisps that taste like fast food, I do remember, was it a couple of years ago, they did KFC flavored Walkers. They were massively disappointing. Didn't taste anything like KFC.
I remember the hot version being okay. But yeah, the standard one, no. Middle of the road. Anyway, sorry. What else have we got in the email?
Sal goes on to say, wanted to drop a mail to you guys to echo your sentiments on Barbenheimer. Loved both. Me and my wife done the double header in one day, Barbie first, if you're wondering, and had a great time. Agree with Cardi's comments on last pod that Barbie was the first time I've had a genuine good time at the cinema for a while, and my immediate reaction at the end of our double header was I had more fun watching Barbie.
It's definitely more fun.
Barbie was... fantastic.
One's a better film, one's much more fun.
Yeah, Oppenheimer made me feel genuinely sad after watching it.
It will do.
Yeah. Also want to touch on an aspect of the soundtrack that is underrated, and that is Billie Eilish's What Was I Made For? After 007's No Time to Die, I make that 2 for 2 for Billie and beautiful, melodic, almost haunting performances. I hate her mainstream music.
Wow.
But these are certified bangers. Are there any artists that have a magic touch when it comes to movie soundtrack songs, or are there great original soundtracks from movies? Well, there you go. Respect the Godfather and respect the sea. Sal.
Do respect the Godfather. I quite like Billie Eilish anyway, but I do agree that song is very good. Very much remind me of the Jesse song from Toy Story 2, that sort of moment.
It'll bring you close to tears.
Yeah. Speaking of Toy Story, I would say actually, I never listened to Randy Newman. I don't care about Randy Newman, but when Randy Newman is in Toy Story... boy, does it work. Maybe that's my example of that.
Really have any specific artists that I like. Yeah, OS, like specific movie soundtracks. I mean, I like when Howard Shaw does a soundtrack, but that's not really a question. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, there we go. Maybe people can write in IGN_UKfeedback@ign.com. Let us know about that. Let us know if you're enjoying Baldur's Gate. What sort of any funny stories from your first few hours of playing? We'd love to know them. God knows what we speak about next week. I can't even tell you what's coming out. So my head's gone. Just gone. What music can we have though? Should we just play that Billie Eilish song?
Why not? A real sad outro to the podcast.
Yeah, that's why not? I hope everyone, if you're playing, has a lovely week. In Baldur's Gate. There we go. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Are you?
nowadays, trends and news cycles change faster than we can blink. But there are some things that withstand the test of time. And if you're looking for a connection to something timeless, and maybe also a glimpse of life at a slower pace, I believe everyone can relate to the very human experiences explored in Jane Austen's novels. And that's where I come in. My name is Alison Larkin. I'm a writer, comedian, and narrator and host of The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin. I spent a lot of my childhood in the part of England where Jane Austen lived and wrote, and now that I live in the States, nothing gives me a sense of homecoming quite like narrating her books. On this show, you'll listen to award-winning narration. I'll give myself a pat on the back for that, as well as conversations with actors, writers, and other fascinating people who all share a passionate love for Jane Austen. So please join me as we embark on a wonderful journey through Jane Austen's work. Be sure to listen and subscribe to The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin, wherever you get your podcasts.